And good morning, and welcome to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network as we join you on this beautiful August morning. Still enjoying some of that summer heat, and school is fired back up. Chip is so excited that he can run that route each morning, and at least here in the Northeast Texas area, a lot of the schools have begun back. I think a few more maybe have another week, but certainly want to remember those all the kids and staff as they head back into their regular routine there. But this morning we're going to be in Proverbs chapter 10 and Proverbs chapter 11. So I hope that you have your Bibles with you, maybe have opportunity to sit down and study with us if you're not driving down the road or maybe listening in at work. But certainly encourage you to join along with us. We enter into kind of a different section of the Psalms this morning as we come into to chapter 10. There's been a little bit more of almost a narrative to a sense in the early part of the book of Proverbs. But as you come into this section of Proverbs, there seems to be a shift. We have a new title, if you will, at beginning in verse 1, as it identifies here the Proverbs of Solomon. But we also get a little bit more into what we think of when we think of Proverbs, get into more of these sentences that sometimes even seem disjointed, like one thought is here and then we shift and maybe a totally different thought is presented in the next one. And get these short statements that are full of truth. I came across this definition that I think it was Robert Taylor recorded, but he said that Proverbs had been defined as a concentrated common sense of countless centuries crammed into a single sentence. Well, there's a good mark. You know, here Proverbs, of course, listed among those books of wisdom, and that's what we have throughout the book, are these little statements that are so crammed full of history. And the problem that we have before us this morning is having some 63 of those statements that are all full of great truth and trying to look through them. But we're going to do our best to look through some of them, highlight some of them even this morning. And I think at the same time, there are some groupings here that we might be able to look at as we consider this wisdom that is set before us. We're also going to note, along with the kind of change in presentation through chapters 10 and 11, one of the things that I think you'll highlight on is the use of parallelism, and that is certainly seen throughout, and it's used in different ways. Here, Solomon most often uses this parallelism in contrast. So he'll say one statement in the beginning of a verse, and the ending of that verse may state it in a kind of negative sense. So here's the positive truth, here's the negative truth. Here's the good that happens when we follow God, here's the negative that happens when we don't follow God. Sometimes it's used to reinforce. And so the same thing might be said in slightly different ways, but you'll say it one way and then come back and reinforce it by saying a slightly different way. And so those are all ways that parallelism is used, but particularly here throughout the part of this Proverbs that we're going to be looking at, a lot of times it's this contrast between good and evil, this contrast between righteousness and wickedness, this contrast between living faithfully and living either wickedly or sometimes even just haphazardly. And that becomes a wicked way of life. And so we'll try to note some of those things as we go through. And so let's just start here in Proverbs 10, and let's grab these first five verses, as primarily we're talking about the contrast of a wise and a foolish son.
A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he casteth away the substance of the wicked. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame.
Okay. As I think through here, I also think back to Proverbs, you know, 1 and 2 and where we open there, and this idea that I want to remember this is Solomon speaking to his son. And at times even remember this is a king speaking to his son who may well be the next king. And so these are bits of wisdom that he's going to need in order to be not just a wise son, but a good ruler. And throughout here, again, notice right off in the beginning here in verse 1, a wise son is going to make a glad father. What joy it is to see your children making wise choices and to be able to feel some sense of accomplishment that you feel you have done a good job in rearing that child in order to make good decisions, in order to come about to where they can stand on their own in that sense. And so that wise father is going to be proud, or excuse me, that wise son is going to make his son, his father glad, is going to make him proud. But the son who is a fool, the son who continues to make foolish decision instead of those wise decision, is going to bring this hardship on his mother. I can picture a mother wringing her hands in anxiety there, thinking about, well, what's he done now? What choice is he going to make? And, oh, I hope he doesn't mess up too badly. You know, she's constantly worried about it and maybe even constantly having to deal with the reproach of others speaking about her son. Do you know what he did this time? Did you hear what happened the other day with so-and-so? And so this is going to be a heaviness for her. This is a burden, if you will, that she's going to have to bear. And so you have a choice. Am I going to be wise or am I going to be foolish? Am I going to bring a good sense of pride to my parents or a heaviness and I shy to say regret, but the idea here that where did we go wrong? What happened here as we think about the actions of our children? And so that choice that the child even is going to have to make, how am I going to live my life? And that continues in these preceding verses. Part of that how you're living your life, if you choose the wicked path, though you may have great treasures, verse 2, nevertheless, these things are not going to profit you. If you have gained by dishonest means, there's not a rest that you can enjoy. You can't pillow your head at night and think of how you have labored hard and diligently and done good work and so can rest your head. You're going to be worried about, am I going to be caught? You're going to be worried about, will these riches come to naught? And not only that, though you have gained the riches of all the world, you also somewhere recognize and know that the judge of all the earth knows that which we have done. And those riches that we have in this life will last but for a moment. But the righteousness delivereth from death. The righteous can, even if he does not have great wealth in this world, can lay down his head at night in peace, knowing that he's right with God and ultimately has a far greater reward in heaven. My mind maybe goes there, Matthew 6, as we think about Jesus even talking about where is your treasure? Is it laid up on earth where it can be destroyed, or is it laid up in heaven? Where are you looking for that reward? Is it in earth, or is it in eternal life? Again, in verse 3, the Lord will be with his people. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish. In other words, he's going to be with his people. He's going to watch over them. He's going to care for them. But he casteth away the substance of the wicked. Here is the one who can lift up and cast down. And so here, God is going to bring into judgment. He is going to reward the wickedness of the wicked and the righteousness of the righteous. And so even your reward, that which you have gained, can be removed from you. And so which are you going to choose? Will you be one, verse 4, that's going to become poor because he deals with a slack hand? I see here the one that idly goes about his work, that does not put effort, that does not put thought in the things that he does. And so he lays by. He says, I'll get to that tomorrow. I'll put that off. And time, days, weeks, months, years pass, and he's done very little to provide for himself. But in contrast, the hand of the diligent will make rich. This is the one that goes forth and applies himself. This is the one that goes forth and labors, and so has laid up for himself a good reward. He's provided for his family. In like manner, verse 5, he's the one that has gathered in the summer. He knows this is the time of harvest. He knows there's coming the winter when there's going to be no food on the ground, when it's too late to lay aside those preparations and those stores. In contrast here, he that sleepeth in the harvest is the son that causes shame. When the need arises, he's not going to be ready for it. I think some of these things lose some of their meaning and application for us when 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, I can go to the supermarket and get anything my heart desires. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily have to have the same care and anticipation in looking forward and saying, well, the harvest is in now. I need to save some of that harvest back that I can have food during the winter months. We might be able to make application to some degree of laboring year-round so that during the difficult days we have something set aside. Even if our job is one of a summer labor, are we going to have set aside the necessary funds to provide for ourselves and for our family through the winter months? And so what path will you choose? Will you be the wise or the foolish son? It's going to show in the actions of your life. Anything there that jumps out at you, Chip?
Well, the first thing I saw was toward the top of the chapter there, and how the child can very well reflect on the parent.
Mm-hmm.
1 Samuel 2, you think about Eli's sons, and the distraught that is expressed there, causing the people to transgress. Think about David being chased around the country by Absalom. So many hard times that you see with children and parents. But, we have a responsibility as well. Raise them up, provoke them not. We have so many responsibilities ourselves. But, when we send your kids out, in that car for the first time, remember whose you are and remember who you're representing, So children absolutely do reflect, on the parent.
Mm-hmm. There was a note here that I kind of skipped over, and I concentrated, I guess, a little bit more on the child himself, but it also reflects back to the parent's responsibility. Mm-hmm. You've had time and opportunity here to make use of that time. What are you doing in order to instruct your child so that when he goes out on his own can be that representative that you would be proud of?
Mm-hmm.
Also here, the idea just, I guess, of seizing opportunity, as you find in verse 4 and 5, using the opportunities that are before us, using your time wisely. That's not just a physical application. There's spiritual application there as well, of course, in using the time, using the opportunities that God has set before us, and using them in a wise manner. As we move on here through those verses, let's this time grab verse 6 through verse 10, and might label those as the blessings of being just.
Blessings are upon the head of the just, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. The wise in heart will receive commandments, but a prating fool shall fall. He that walketh uprightly walketh surely, but he that perverteth his way shall be known. He that winketh with the eye causeth sorrow, but a prating fool shall fall.
Again, as you go through here, we continue to see this idea of contrast, but But also through here, I see that idea of that you even mentioned. You're leaving behind you a legacy. Mm-hmm. Hey, you're going to be known just as the child is a reflection on the parent. You also are thinking here as that child is becoming his own entity. As he's growing up and making his own choices. One day he's going to move out of that house. He's a reflection on himself. And I think Solomon's teaching his son, you're going to be remembered by something. You're either going to be remembered as a wise man or you're going to be remembered as a foolish man. And that's going to be known here by your actions. And so he begins, there are blessings upon the head of the just, the one who is a right thinker, the one who has his, if you will, his head on straight, and the one that's striving to go forth and do that which is right. He is just in the sense here he's trying to striving to do that which is upright and right in the sight of God. And so he wants to be a faithful, a godly individual. Well, that one is going to enjoy blessings in this life and in the life that is to come. But violence is going to cover the mouth of the wicked. I think here the idea of sowing and reaping, this is going to be another theme that's going to be seen throughout chapter 10 and 11, that you are going to reap even as you have sown. And one who has sown in violence, I have the idea here of he's being covered up by it. It's returning on himself again. And so there's benefits and there's blessings here that are going to come back upon the just, but violence is going to come back upon the wicked. There's a lot of examples of that. Maybe the greatest here that was pointed out is Haman. Hmm. He spent his life in hatred. And what does he end up doing? He hangs on his own gallows. He wished hatred upon his perceived enemy Mordecai. He had that hatred that was expressed towards the Jews as a whole. And here it is, it's that violence that he wished upon them that ultimately led to his downfall and his destruction. Throughout history again, we think of maybe the Edomites. The book of Obadiah is written in their quote-unquote honor or memory. You showed no love. You showed no mercy. And so mercy was not going to be shown to them. They were going to be destroyed. That violence was going to come back upon them. It was going to cover them because of their own wickedness. And so then he continues, verse 7, the memory of the just is blessed. People are going to look back fondly upon those that have lived upright, those who have lived justly, those who have lived righteously. But the name of the wicked shall rot. Somewhat here, the idea, I think, of decay in the sense of it's going to be removed. People aren't going to want to remember the wicked. But I think also you can think of names that even still to this day cause a distaste, if you will, in our mouth. I mean, the utterance of Jezebel, yeah, and Judas and other such names automatically bring to mind wickedness, evil. For the choices that they had made. And so there's a memory there. Is it going to be a sweet memory, or is it going to be a rotten, a putrid memory? And again, here's a father to a son. You're making your choices. Who are you going to be? How will you be remembered? How are you going to make these choices? Verse 8, the wise in heart will receive commandments. The wise are going to listen. Are you going to receive the instruction of your father? Are you going to receive the instruction of your father which is in heaven? Will you listen to the things that he has instructed, the things that he set before you? If you will receive commandments, you will do well. But a prating fool shall fall. Here I have the idea of one who's too busy talking to listen. And so he's setting himself up for destruction. He will not listen to those commandments. He will not receive instruction. And so he is going to face his downfall. He that walketh uprightly, verse 9, walketh surely. You can have confidence in your walk, in your step, how you live your life. But he that perverteth his way shall be known. Again, if I'm walking down the street of a community, even such as Mount Vernon, we have some, I forget, 2,000 to 3,000 people that live in Mount Vernon and in its immediate areas, a smaller town. People tend to know one another. And so if I'm walking down the street, can I, in a sense, in a good sense, hold my head high? Or am I one who, as I walk by, others are going to be whispering at, oh, you know who that one is, don't you? You know the things that he's done, and those things will spread and be known. So he that perverteth his ways shall be known. Not only are you going to be known in this life, but remember that God knows the choices and the things that you have done. So whether it's in this life or whether it's in the next, you're not going to be able to hide the wicked choices that you have made. And then finally there in verse 10, he that winketh his eye or winketh with the eye causes sorrow, but again a prating fool shall fall. This is again the one, it seems, the contrast here is against two wicked things. The winking of an eye, maybe some have indicated that it's the idea of the one who is a hypocrite, who by his eye is giving signals to others for your destruction. Here, he winketh with the eye, and maybe he says one thing, but he's doing another. He's going to cause sorrow. He's going to cause problems for other people. But here, the one who is a prating fool, this one who, again, is harmful in his speech, is going to fall. He's going to bring about, again, his own destruction. And so, again, how are you going to be known? How are you going to live your life? The choice that the Father wants the Son to make is you be that wise man, that wise individual who's going to make good choices and be lifted up. Thoughts there?
The only thing I remembered, I was looking at the ESV here, that prating fool, mm-hmm. prating fool. The ESV says babbling fool. Mm-hmm. And immediately I thought back to the warning that Timothy would get, you know, to disregard the babblers, disregard that type of speech and those babbling questions, the endless genealogies and all those things that really don't accomplish anything.
Mm-hmm.
And here, you know, it certainly agrees with that particular context as well. You know, it's useless. It results in a fall. And in a little side note here, I had the name Diotrephes,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
an individual that, you know, would fall because of the way he treated others, even perhaps the babbling that he did, you know,
right.
as it related to the apostles and others. So certainly a warning for our tongue. James 3.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting, again, that was another verse, James 3, and the concepts of the tongue there that come up time and again. When you talk about wise and foolish, how often speech is a betrayer
yeah.
of whether one is wise or foolish. And so we're going to see even those things again through this section. Let's go on. Again, this choice between right and wrong is going to be seen and contrasted in verse 11 through verse 15.
The mouth of a righteous man is a well of life, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. Hatred stirreth up strifes, but love covereth all sins. In the lips of him that hath understanding, wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. Wise men lay up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty.
All right. So again, what choices will you make as you go through life? The wise man here is the one who wants to keep his heart with all diligence, Proverbs 4 and verse 23. Here, verse 11, it says, the mouth of the righteous is a well of life. It's going to spring up unto life. Someone made mention here, or remark, according to the physical heart, pumps forth life into the body, supplying that fresh nutrients through the body. Well, so a righteous tongue promotes life. It's going to bless those not only of his life, but others who are around him. he's going to be a blessing. But not so. Violence is going to cover the mouth of the wicked. Again, he's going to have these hard times, these difficulties that he has promoted, that he has lived by. They're going to come back on him. And so hatred, it's going to stir up strife. When you are out looking for wickedness, you are out looking for evil, you're going to find it. And you're never going to be at peace. How often are those who are constantly stirring up strife, well, they never are at peace. There is no one that is ever going to be pleasing unto them. There's always going to be some shortcoming that they're going to be able to find, always some fault in someone else at least. And so it's going to continually to stir up, to brew within their hearts. There's always going to be this fussing that is going to be going on. But love covers all sins. Here, certainly not the idea that, well, just because I love you, we're going to ignore sin. That's not a concept we ever see within the pages of the New Testament or the Bible as a whole. In fact, 1 Corinthians 5, that was a congregation that was puffed up, seemingly because how they treated that man who had his father's wife. And he says, you ought not to be puffed up. You ought to be rather ashamed because of what you have done. And so it's not just going to be an ignoring of sin, but what is love going to do? Love is going to seek forgiveness in a godly fashion. Love is going to seek to bring that individual out of sin. Love is going to seek to bring that individual into repentance with God. Love is going to bring them into a right relationship. And so love is willing to forgive. It's willing to forget. It's willing to have that forgiving attitude here when one is striving to do that which is right. Mm-hmm. I've often amazed and appreciative of this great congregation here at Mount Vernon, that when someone responds to the invitation, they are surrounded in love by their brothers and sisters in Christ. We want to encourage you. We want to support you. We want to be there for you. And thankfully, I don't witness anyway, and I don't think it goes on, but this whispering and backbiting, well, I wonder what they did this time, and I wonder what's going on in their life, and what wickedness could they have done, or, oh, you know what they did, so how is it that they can ask for forgiveness of that? Well, there's this readiness. You want to do what's right, we're going to support and encourage you in doing that which is right. That's what love is going to do. And so, in the lips of him that hath understanding, wisdom is found. Are you one who first has knowledge? Do you have understanding? How are you going to speak forth truth? How are you going to speak forth wisdom? If you first don't know understanding, if you don't have knowledge, a wise man's going to apply himself unto knowledge, unto learning about God, about learning that which is right, and then promoting it. But a rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. Sometimes there is a need here to encourage learning, especially as we're thinking about children. Again, I think we live in a society at times where, don't correct, don't instruct, let the children learn and grow for themselves. And yet the Bible reminds us and teaches us sometimes there is a need there for some stronger love, for some stronger guidance there to encourage one to drive out folly. Brother Taylor remarked here on Adam Clark that says of this verse, he says, he that can learn and will not learn should be made to learn. And that's part of the job of that parent. To guide that child, you need to know what's right and wrong. So don't go slothfully through life. Rather, apply yourself unto wisdom, so that wise men will lay up knowledge, even while the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. Wise men are going to seek out wisdom and instruction and lay it up in their minds. But the fool, fool's always going to blurt out whatever it is that he thinks, whether it's right or wrong. He's going to tell you what his opinion is. He's not going to know how to guard his tongue. Again, goes back there even to that speech. His mouth is near destruction. He's going to speak everything that he thinks, even to his own destruction, so that his life is full with folly. And then verse 15, the rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. And what are you trusting? What are you trusting? Are you trusting in your riches? Are you trusting in those things that can quickly be removed? Or are you trusting in that which is eternal? Are you trusting in that which will last? There's, again, a mark of true wisdom in what we are putting our faith, our confidence, and our trust in. Well, I know we're hitting some big sections with a lot of content, but anything jump out at you there in those four or five verses?
No, the only thing that I kind of thought of when you hit verse 12 was, talking about covering sins. The first thing I thought about was when Nathan went to David. You know, that's what love does. You know, when we see, something, we don't always see those things, in people's lives. God does. But, have the respect and the love for that individual to say, look, I think you should consider what you're doing here. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with David. And he said, you're right. I've sinned. Mm-hmm. And that's what real love does.
That's right. And it's a sad comment that too many in our society as a whole think that anytime we disagree with someone or anytime we try to encourage to rethink a situation, well, I must hate you. I must be angry with you. Well, no, I'm trying to encourage you. I want to build you up, and I want to see you succeed. That's love. Mm-hmm. Letting you go down a wrong path and just ignore it might be kinder for the moment, but not for the long run. Mm-hmm. And so we show that true love. Well, let's contrast vice and virtue. And this will take us verse 16 down through verse 20.
16 to 20. The labor of the righteous tendeth to life, the fruit of the wicked to sin. He is the way of life that keepeth instruction, or he is in the way of life that keepeth instruction. But he that refuses reproof erreth. He that hideth hatred with lying lips, and he that uttereth a slander is a fool. In the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. The tongue of the just is as choice silver. The heart of the wicked is little worth.
All right. I starred verse 16 in many ways as maybe a key verse through this entire chapter, really even chapters 10 and 11 at least, that here the labor of the righteous tends to life, but the fruit of the wicked is sin. Mm. How much have we talked about that in terms of you're going to choose whether to follow instruction or not? You're going to choose whether to listen to your parents' wisdom or not? You're going to ultimately choose whether to listen to God or not? There's this mark here. Are you going to be wise or are you going to be foolish? But ultimately, it all comes down to this. The righteous that are going to follow after God is going to tend to life. It's going to tend to blessings. It's going to tend to a lengthening of days. But the fruit of the wicked is to sin. He's going to continue to follow after that which is wicked. And so, again, you make your choice, but it's going to come with rewards or consequences based on that which you have chosen. And so here, your work, your labor is a good thing, but you choose to follow after righteousness. Mm-hmm. You choose to follow after that which is upright. I think there of Ephesians 4 and verse 28. Here's a contrast of an individual's life that has been turned by the gospel. Ephesians 4 and verse 28, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good that he may have to him that giveth that needeth. Mm-hmm. Instead of being self-centered, you have now become concentrated on others. You used to steal for your own benefit, your own gain, because you only cared about yourself. Now you're working, you're laboring, even because you care about others. Your efforts are now going towards helping other individuals, and there's the great change. Are you going to tend to life, an honorable life, or one of pride, one of selfishness, that's ultimately going to lead to destruction? He is in the way of life that keeps instruction. Again, if I'm going to walk in these wise paths, it's going to tend to life. But he that refuses reproof erreth. You're going to continue in wickedness. You're going to continue in sin. This is the one who will not listen to anything. You try to correct. You try to reprove this individual, and he refuses to listen. He refuses to hear that which is trying to be said unto him. And so, no, that's a life that's not going to tend. It's not going to lend itself to a lengthening of days, because he's going to continue in his foolishness, even to his own destruction. Noting again our words and our mouth, he that hideth hatred with lying lips, and he that uttereth a slander is a fool. Again, is this one whose heart is full of hatred and harshness? Even though he seeks to hide it, he's going to be known. He's going to be found out. He's not going to be able to hide his speech from other people, and he's going to be known for what he is. And one who continues to talk, verse 19, in the multitude of words, there wanteth not sin. The more you speak, the more chance, I guess we might be able to say, the more opportunity to speak forth that which is not true, that which is of gossip, that which is false, that which is slanderous, all these opportunities arise. I don't want to be one who's known for a multitude of words. I would rather be known for the quality of my words that I speak rather than the quantity. It's not about how much I can say about any particular subject. It is how much good can I say on a particular subject. And sometimes the answer there is keep your mouth shut. a trait that unfortunately is not too common. And so he that refraineth his lips is wise. Again, think about what you're going to say. Think about the good, or think about the damage that's going to arise. And what do you want to have caused from that? Again, James is going to warn us there in James 3 of how the tongue may be a little member, but it can do great damage. And so even there, verse 20, the tongue of the just is as choice silver. The one who is just, the one who thinks about his words, the one who uses his words wisely, there's a value, there is a treasure there, but the heart of the wicked is of little worth. There's no value there. There's nothing to have any confidence in. And so how will we live, especially in regards there, how we're going to use our tongues?
As you came across verse 17, I thought about Jesus' confrontation on a regular basis with the Pharisees and that mindset. Matthew 13, I believe, is verse 15, where it says, as he looked back to Isaiah's prophecy, and he says, you closed your heart, you closed your ears, closed your eyes, and now it's impossible for me to heal you. You need to open it up. Mm-hmm. And understand with your heart and hear with your ears and see with your eyes, Mm-hmm. And obviously that comment there in verse 17 looks back to those that he would have the opportunity to cry about, mm-hmm. There in chapter 23 of Matthew's account, and weep over them because of their refusing reproof.
Mm-hmm.
Sad.
Very much so. I'm not doing a very good job watching my clock today, so we'll try to move a little faster. We've still got about 20 minutes here, but a mm-hmm. Whole other chapter we haven't touched either. So let's look at wisdom and folly in verse 21 through 26.
The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for want of wisdom. The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. It is a sport to a fool to do mischief, but a man of understanding hath wisdom. The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him, but the desire of the righteous shall be granted. As the whirlwind passeth, so is the wicked no more, but the righteous is an everlasting foundation. As vinegar to the teeth, and as smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them that send him.
All right. So again, this contrast that continues to be seen through these verses and through this chapter. Are we going to be known for our wisdom or for our folly? Again, Matthew 7, Jesus is going to talk about the wise and the foolish builder. And the show of the wise and the foolish builder is when it comes down to the test. Not how beautiful the house was, but does the house last, was their thought. It comes down to you both heard, you both listened, but one applied itself. Mm-hmm. One who will listen to wisdom and do it is a wise man. One who listens and refuses it is a foolish man. And so the blessing of the Lord maketh rich. Verse 21. The lips of the righteous will feed many. He's going to be able to help. He's going to benefit. But fools will die for want of wisdom. There is a lacking there. They are starving, as it were, because there is no wisdom. They refuse to listen to that instruction. And so the blessing of the Lord will make rich. What are we going to choose? He addeth no sorrow to it. I want to be one who's going to seek after the blessings of God and after the wisdom of God. And so here I can choose those blessings, or verse 23, I can do this mischief, and it is as a sport, it's an entertainment to me, but I want to be that man of wisdom who is going to seek after that understanding. The fear of the wicked will come upon him. He's going to return unto himself that which he has sowed in his life. Well, guess what? As the righteous, I'm seeking after the blessings of God. And as long as I continue in that, I'm going to be rewarded. I'm going to be well blessed in my life. My life may not have the treasures of the physical blessings of this life, but I can trust in the confidence of the promises of God. And so the wicked will pass away quickly, verse 25, even as the whirlwind. But the righteous has that everlasting foundation. There's an eternal life that I can trust in. Paul would be able to speak of all of his hardships in life, and yet he says, I look forward to that eternal home. And so I reached the end of my life, and I says, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me in that day, and not to me only, but unto all them that love his appearing. That's my goal. That's my treasure. That's that foundation that will last, and I'd rather have that than verse 26 and be as the one who is known for his sluggardness, is known even for his wicked ways, does not apply himself unto that which is right, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, both things that will make us cringe and make us want to quickly move away from them. Well, so are those who are not wise in the way in which they live their lives.
I'm consistently impressed with the way the Spirit wants us to understand, you know, these things that lie in front of us, because I see the pictures that they put up here as sport, mm-hmm. as the whirlwind, as vinegar, as smoke. Those are all meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you sit back and contemplate, you know, what does smoke do to the eyes, and what does vinegar, you come to a profound understanding if you just apply your mind to the sentence that's in front of you. And man, what great lessons we have.
And those are things, like you said, that we immediately have an attachment to. Even today, we know what a strong vinegar taste is. We know what it's like to have that smoke from a fire blow in our eyes. And so, I mean, they recall to our minds those images that are being betrayed there.
Yeah.
Let's close out the chapter then, verse 27 through verse 32, the reward, if you will, of the righteous and the wicked.
The fear of the Lord prolongeth days, but the years of the wicked shall be shortened. The hope of the righteous shall be gladness, but the expectation of the wicked shall perish. The way of the Lord is strength to the upright, but destruction shall be to the workers of iniquity. The righteous shall never be removed, but the wicked shall not inhabit the earth. The mouth of the just bringeth forth wisdom, but the forward tongue shall be cut out. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked speaketh forwardness.
Okay, what type of people again do we want to be? Verse 27 reminds us again, I have that marked as kind of a key verse, the fear of the Lord. Well, there's the beginning of knowledge. There's the beginning of wisdom and instruction. That is going to prolong or lengthen our days, but the years of the wicked will be shortened. Again, I would describe those as maxims, as principles. There are wicked people that are going to live long lives, but as a whole, their lives are not going to be full of peace and comfort and safety and security. They're going to have to pay for the wicked things that they have done in this life, but certainly in eternity. The righteous are going to live lives that will tend to health and life and a fullness of days and days of peace. That even if their life is shortened in the idea of this world, nevertheless, I think we can also extend that where not only the days of this life were fuller, but also that one has hope. That one has an eternal life that he can look forward to. He's not being cut off from the Lord as the wicked will be. He will be eternally removed from the Lord, whereas the righteous will continue with him. And so the hope of the righteous is gladness. There's something that he can look forward to, but the wicked, there's nothing. Whatever joy he has right now is all he can look forward to, because he doesn't know when his wicked ways are going to be cut off in this life. And when he dies, there is no expectation for him. There is no good hope. He is going to be cut off from the Lord and eternally removed from him. And so the way of the Lord is strength to the upright. You're going to be strengthened in doing that which is right and good. I can, again, lay down my head at night and know I'm being faithful unto the Lord. And even though if I face persecution, nevertheless, I can rest peacefully knowing that I'm doing that which is right. But ultimately, destruction is all that awaits those workers of iniquity. The righteous will never be removed. Even when we strive to cut them off in this life, as many have done, the ways of the righteous still last. Those wicked are cut off. There's ultimately coming a day in which the righteous are going to be eternally rewarded and the wicked will be eternally separated from God. And so what end do you want? Even the Father teaching the Son here, whatever temporary measure you might gain from the ways of folly are not worth it. And so seek after wisdom even there. As he says, the wicked will not inhabit the earth. They are not going to be blessed. The mouth of the just brings forth wisdom. He's seeking after it. He's going to speak it. It's going to be that which he has, what I'm trying to express there, he's going to bring forth after his heart. He sought unto wisdom, and now he's speaking it forth. But the froward tongue is going to be cut off. It will be cut out or cut off. It will be removed. It will do him no good. And so the lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked speaks frowardness. Again, this wickedness that is going to come out from him. I know that if I know that which is right, if I know that which is good and acceptable in the eyes of God, that's what I'm going to want to bring forth out of my mouth. But the wicked, he's going to speak whatever comes to his mind, whether it's right, whether it's appropriate, whether it's good, whether it's not. He's going to be known by his tongue because he, again, is going to speak whatever it is that he wants to speak. And so be built up in that ways of righteousness, the one that's going to be established, the one that can stand strong, but the one who continues after wickedness, he is destined for destruction.
Seems that he continually through chapter 10 brings up the subject of the mouth, the tongue, the heart. So we all need to have that same admonishment this morning, because evidently it's something important that we need to see, because we keep going back to James 3.
That's right. There's a lot there that talks about the tongue. And I think part of that is we talk about wisdom, and ultimately that wisdom is going to be shown. And how is it going to be shown? It's going to be shown in your speech, and it's going to be shown in your actions. And I don't know what application you have made in your life to seeking after God, to seeking after righteousness, until I watch your ways, until I watch your speech. And then I know something of what you hold in value.
You remember Peter outside the judgment hall, they said, your speech bewrayeth you, and so does ours.
That's
oftentimes.
Right. That's right. We've got about 8 minutes. I think what I'd like to do, and maybe there'll be some highlights here, I would like at least to get to be able to read. A lot of things are similar here in chapter 11. Again, it's the Father, it's the King that's speaking to his Son, that wants him to know wisdom and wants him to seek after it. And so these are principles you need to seek after. And this constant contrast, the way of the wicked is going to come to destruction. The way of the righteous is going to lend to life and to happiness and to peace and faithfulness with God. Mm-hmm. It ought to be an easy choice. Now, sometimes the things of this world entice us, but we need to come back here and see, here's the wisdom of a wise man who ultimately looks at it all and says, what's worthwhile is seeking after wisdom. And so, Chip, if you don't mind, let's just read through this chapter. If there's something that jumps out at you or something that jumps out at me, we might interrupt for a second, but we may only have time to kind of read through the chapter here.
Okay. A false balance is abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. When pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom. The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them. Riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivereth from death. The righteousness of the perfect shall direct his way, but the wicked shall fall by his own wickedness. The righteousness of the upright shall deliver them, but transgressors shall be taken in their own naughtiness.
I'm going to break you there. That was one section that I had, especially that I thought goes back to verse 1. The Lord is upright. And he expects those who walk after him to also walk in uprightness. And that's going to build us up where wickedness is going to is going to cast them down. And so even though it might cost me, I want to walk in my honesty and my integrity and be godlike.
Mm-hmm. In the light as he is in the light, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
When a wicked man dieth, his expectations shall perish, and the hope of unjust men perisheth. The righteous is delivered out of trouble, and the wicked cometh in his stead. An hypocrite with his mouth destroyeth his neighbor, but through knowledge shall the just be delivered. When it goeth well with the righteous, the city rejoiceth, and when the wicked perish, there is shouting. By the blessing of the upright, the city is exalted, but it is overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. He that is void of wisdom despiseth his neighbor, but a man of understanding holdeth his peace. A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. Where no counsel is, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors there is safety. He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth suretyship is sure.
I might break you there. That was another section that I had marked off there, and again, particularly, it seems, in dealing with others still. And one that really caught my mind is, remember, the king to a son that one day is going to be king. And verse 14, you seek after the wisdom of counselors. Not only that, but wise counsel, that we might know truth. And so it's certainly good for us to surround ourselves with those who can help us in a quest for wisdom, to know right and wrong, and to be those counselors for us. And so we need that even in our lives, because again, throughout there, you're going to see the blessings of righteousness and the downfall of wickedness.
And in that immediate context, those of you that listen out there this morning, remember the problem that would come up with Rehoboam and Jeroboam. refusing counsel, choosing the wrong counsel, right. Things of that nature. So this hits home very hard. Mm-hmm. A gracious woman retaineth honor, and strong men retain riches. The merciful man doeth good to his own soul, but he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh. The wicked worketh a deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward. As righteousness tendeth to life, so that pursueth evil, he that pursueth evil, rather, pursueth it to his own death. They that are of a forward heart are an abomination to the Lord, but such as are upright in their way are his delight. Though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished, but the seed of the righteous shall be delivered. As a jewel of gold and a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. The desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath.
And that's another section there that I hit, and two things jumped out. One, you want to talk about illustrations. We won't even go into verse 22 there,
yeah.
And, that woman with the swine snout. But particularly I mark verse 19. That's that reoccurring theme. If we want to follow after righteousness, it's going to tend to life. But if we're going to pursue after evil, it's going to lead to our destruction. And that's a true principle in this life, but it's certainly true in eternity. And also there, verse 21, though even a multitude joins in together to do wickedness, it's still wickedness.
Yeah.
So just because others will agree with you and follow after you doesn't make something right.
Right.
And so pursue after righteousness.
There is that scattereth and yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than is meat, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. He that diligently seeketh good procureth favor, but he that seeketh mischief, it shall come unto him. He that trusteth in his own riches shall fall, but the righteous shall flourish as a branch. He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind, and the fool shall be servant to the wise of heart. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he that winneth souls is wise. Behold, the righteous shall be recompensed in the earth much more, the wickedness and the sinner.
Mm. And how I wish we had a little more time there, because there is so much crammed into that last section. But ultimately, we can talk about trusting in God. We can talk about selfishness versus liberality in our giving, not just back to God, but even unto others. There is that one who's going to hoard everything to himself and care for no one that's not going to be well spoken of. There's the one who refuses to trust in God, and so he doesn't scatter his seed. He's, well, I'll put out just a little bit because I want to eat the rest. Well, then your harvest isn't going to be great. And so ultimately you're consuming more than you're taking in. Ultimately, you'll come to nothing. So what do you trust in? Verse 28, you trust in your riches, or will you trust in God? Verse 29 is a very well-known verse. He that troubleth his own house will inherit the wind. There's nothing good that's going to come from that. But then verse 30. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. Again, everything we're told here in chapters 10 and 11 is righteousness points to life. Here, the fullness of life, but in eternity, eternal life. And he that winneth souls is wise. Why? Because he's looking at eternity. He's considering not just the things here in this life, but he's looking at things that are going to last forever. So we might ask ourselves, where are you looking? And I believe we probably just got cut off, but maybe the recording catches the end here. Certainly thankful you've joined us today. A lot of great wisdom here in the book of Proverbs, and hope that you can be back with us tomorrow as we look at Proverbs 12 and 13. And so thank you for being with us today. And as always, we hope that you have a great day.